Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 73.
This week on the podcast, on the NSA Showdown Scorecard, it's Snowden 1, Obama 0.
From Larry Summers to Putin's posture problems, Obama covers it all in his pre-vacation press conference.
And our special guest, Mike Nuttall, joins us for a discussion of the 2016 presidential contenders.
If we had a dollar for every time this was on the rundown, we'd be rich. Steve King's a racist.
And Jeff Bezos buys the Washington Post, and journalism continues to face an uncertain future.
Plus, this week in Pot Meat Kettle, Rush Limbaugh calls Oprah Winfrey fat.
All this and more. Plus, don't forget to follow us on Twitter and Instagram. This is Brain Trust Live.
So guys, there was no news this week again.
Oh my god, I texted Lila this morning as I was working on the dock, and I was like, if you think it was a rough news week in the past, the real freaking doozy this week.
When I thought he was telling me that something big had happened and I'd missed it.
Nope.
And so I frantically checked the news and then I was like, no, nothing has happened.
No.
Nothing at all.
No.
Nothing has happened. And less is about to happen because the president's going on vacation now.
Right. And Congress is already on vacation.
Right.
They've basically been on a permanent vacation anyway.
Right. It's not really real news to report about them ever.
No.
So we're winging it, guys.
Luckily for you, we're really sort of like going with this whole guest situation.
That's right.
Like we had Grant on last week and that was super fun.
Right.
And this week we don't have a sit-in guest with us, but we brought on a dear friend of ours, Mike Nuttall, who is a huge Hillary supporter. And we're going to get to him a little bit later in the podcast and
we
do a segment with him.
2016 is all anyone's talking about anyway.
Right. We've spent basically the entire sort of year and a half we've been doing the podcast. It's basically we've just been tearing down Hillary Clinton.
You just made a squeaky noise on your
chair. So we figured now is the time.
Yeah.
I don't know why now,
necessarily.
Well,
it's a slow news week.
Slow news week.
The news is reporting speculation about 2016 because they have nothing else to report.
But he's going to tell us
why he supports Hillary.
He supports Hillary and why everybody else should.
Yeah.
And we're probably,
going to talk about what other candidates, you know, are sort of on the scene and how he feels about them too, probably. And
we're going to try and have an adult conversation, even though Lila and I are probably going to want to yell at him.
Yeah. Well, you and him like to get into like Facebook
we
tiffs.
Do. He is likes to do a pro Hillary Facebook post, and I like to write
an anti Hillary
about it.
Yeah,
and that usually devolves into he and I sort of like having a very public Facebook
brawl
about it. But you know, we're dear friends,
right?
So we can do it.
Yeah,
but we're gonna have him on in a little bit,
right? So stay tuned for that. The only real sort of news of the week is that the president made a speech about all of the privacy things that have been, you know, that have been coming out of the woodwork. Before he went on vacation, he decided to make a speech about whatever.
Well, he's been making a lot of speeches recently because he knows that he's going on vacation.
Right.
He knows that there's a lot of sort of like impending battles coming up. There's sort of, he's obviously been taking a lot of flack for the NSA. He's trying to get out in front of the whole sort of,
well, them trying to shut down the government,
Obamacare. So he was giving a lot of speeches this week. He also had like one of his first press conferences that he's had in a while, where he actually took questions from the media, and he talked a lot about what is going to happen with this whole NSA leak situation. And a lot of people were sort of speculating whether his new ideas about how to fix this is sort of like whether it means that Snowden won. Basically, it's like, did Snowden beat Obama? Like he stared down Obama. Like I think it was one of the headlines on Drudge Report or something ridiculous.
Some very dramatic headlines about what is not a super dramatic issue if you listen to Obama speak on it. I mean, he was sort of like, you know, he sort of allowed for the fact that there are maybe issues in the way that they have been gathering this intelligence and sort of talked about some of the changes that he's planning to make that include sort of appointing a panel of private citizens with expertise in the area.
Right. Former intelligence officials, civil liberties, and privacy advocates and others to sort of like look at more closely at this program.
Right. And at what changes, and to suggest changes and things like that.
Right.
And they also said that he's sort of proposing the idea that they add like a civil rights lawyer basically to any discussions, you know, with the NSA about programs that they're going to start. So that somebody's advocating for people.
Well, and that has been sort of like what most people have been saying, and even people from the left and the right seem to think that this would be a fairly easy thing to do, is just, you know, the FISA court sort of decides upon sort of like all of these rulings and what and things like that. And all of that is done in privacy. And all of those people are appointed in secret. They're appointed by, I think John Roberts, right? Aren't they appointed by... I think they're appointed by...
Or at least that's the...
Or something. Like, I mean, it's all done in private. And there's no reason why some of those rulings and some of the people who are on those court, like, why that can't be sort of, like, done in a more public fashion. Like, we don't necessarily have to know specifically what intelligence they're collecting in the sense that we need to know all of the details that are going to make things public about, you know, potential terrorist attacks. But we need to sort of...
We need an understanding of the mechanism that they're using to gather the information. And we need to know that someone is making sure that they're doing it constitutionally because the issue that we have at the moment is that nobody knows.
Right. It's lawless right now, basically.
Yeah. You're just intelligence gathering wherever they damn well please.
Right.
And there's no one knows what they're doing, so no one knows whether or not it's legal. And it's just sort of a giant...
And when no one knows whether it's legal or not,
it's not legal.
Probably not.
Yeah. Right. Once no one knows, that's when you know.
Yeah.
That's when we as people know. But Obama's press conference was sort of a hodgepodge.
Yeah. He talked about a lot of stuff, obviously. I mean, he basically sort of like he wanted to, you know, say anything that he felt like he needed to say before, you know, going on vacation, I guess. It was sort of his...
Yeah. He was sort of like...
pre-vacation manifesto, if you
He was, like, pre-defending people that he might nominate for positions. Because he was talking about Larry Summers, who he's talking about nominating to the Fed, but no one's been put forth yet officially.
No.
And, I think he stupidly named him in a way that's sort of inviting a Susan Rising.
Well, and he even said, that's the funny thing. Oh, I know. That almost makes me feel like he's not going to appoint him.
Maybe.
Because first off, he's been getting a lot...
And he wants us to kind of go after him.
He's been getting a lot of flack on the left.
Yeah.
For the Larry Summers.
Well,
sort of like floating. And that's understandable because he's going to, he hasn't officially caught it from us, but consider this him catching it from us because that's a bad idea.
Correct.
But he sort of, in his, he's been making some sort of defenses of Larry Summers and talking about
like
how he's
vague,
really not so bad. And it's,
we shouldn't hate him as much as we thought we should.
But he did say, he said, he sort of was talking in terms of how a lot of his nominations have been sort of like torn down before he has even actually done the
nominating
of the people. And he said, I felt the same way when people were attacking Susan Rice before she was nominated for anything. So if you're Larry Summers, being compared to Susan Rice is probably not
what you
want.
Like,
that's not a good sign
but also,
for you to be getting
the
job that you want.
His strategy now, or is this, is his strategy to not nominate Larry Summers, or does he think that by acknowledging that this is happening, he's somehow stopping it? Because I feel like it might be the latter, and I think that's maybe a foolish point.
Could be, yeah.
Maybe not. I don't know.
Who knows?
Let's hope. He's also, you know, worried, as I think everyone is, that there's going to be some last-minute shenanigans to get the mandate. You know, Obamacare, there are provisions in Obamacare that have already gone into effect.
Right.
But the big provision, the mandate, kicks in 2014. He's fairly certain they're going to try some nonsense.
Right, well, because there's going to be a budget battle, obviously. So
we've got a debt ceiling situation coming up. We've got
already
a lot of bargaining chips in
there. There are already a lot of Republicans who are saying that they are willing to do a full-on government shutdown over the implementation of the upcoming provisions in Obamacare that haven't kicked in yet.
Yeah.
So he sort of really wanted to get out in front of that. And I love the way that he said this, because you and I have been talking a lot about... Nobody has really sort of, like, said what we have said in the sense that, like, what, do Republicans just not want people to have health care? I mean, I think, like...
Because currently their platform is to prevent people from getting health care.
It's
not to help them do it by other means.
But you haven't heard Obama actually accuse Republicans of not wanting people to have health care, which he did, because he said the idea that you would shut down the government unless you prevent 30 million people from getting health care is a bad idea. And I'm like, yes.
Yeah, that's correct.
Like, if you're going to shut down, like, all of America because you don't want people to have health care, like, it doesn't seem like that's going to play well.
That's not your best bet.
It's not your best bet.
Unless, I mean, it's been their best bet, so who knows? They didn't have a lot of great bets, as it turns out, but...
No.
But he also was sort of, like, trying to tamp down expectations, because there's, like, there's the part of the country that thinks that Obamacare is somehow going to, like, convene death panels and cause them to die of treatable illness. Then there's the other people who think that it's going to solve all problems for everyone at all moments.
Right.
And we know that's not true because we were never really advocates of this approach to begin with.
No.
This is a terrible approach. It's better than no approach, but it's terrible.
Yeah.
And so he's also had to go around and sort of like tamp down everyone's expectations because the sort of flip argument, you know, the argument that you can, the only argument you can make in response to the Republicans talking about how it's going to ruin everyone's lives is to talk about how it's going to give everyone health care.
Right, exactly.
It's not really going to.
It's not going to do that. And I've heard him say things like this before, actually sort of in a, I like how he's wording it here, but previously he has said, the Republicans think that we're going to start the first government-run agency that has never had one problem.
Right,
like,
yeah.
That's sort of like a popular thing for him to say, which is true. Yeah. I mean, to start sort of like this big, I mean, it's a bureaucracy.
A huge, brand new program,
sort of like,
there will be glitches.
There's going to be glitches. And he said, again, in this press conference, he said, that's true, by the way, of a car company rolling out a new car. It's true of Apple rolling out the new iPad.
Yeah.
It's true. I mean, Apple can't get anything right.
No. These days, certainly.
There's always maps don't work.
That's why they have to release updates.
That's why they... Right.
That's and why going your to be, operating system might right. be 6.1.2.
Right. And that's why I was watching Meet the Press this morning, and one of the Republicans on there was saying, like, just the fact that he's had to sort of, like, delay all these provisions or do this or that or the other means that, obviously, like, we can see that this whole thing is a bad idea or whatever. And it's just sort of like, no. They're trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
I mean, it's imperfect. When he passed this in his first term, he said it was imperfect.
Yeah.
Everybody said, we're going to have to fix this as we go. So, there's probably going to be some screw-ups when this starts next year.
Correct.
It's not a reason to defund the whole thing and defund the entire government because of it.
Right.
Like, you're going to have to fix
it. You're not going to be able to fix them unless you try.
Right.
To begin with. Yeah, and also, you can't permanently prevent a law from taking effect by defunding the government. That's not a long-term solution to the problem.
No.
You can try to repeal the law as many as 40 times 40 if you
times.
Need to.
Mm-hmm.
But this is not really an actual strategy to go after. It's a short-term fix at best. You can prevent 30 million people from getting health care immediately for the next few months if you want.
Yes.
But you're not going to...
Well, they do want.
Which they do want. But I mean, that you don't win the war that way.
No. Not at all. But anyway, also, this is a good one because we've been talking about this a lot lately, and I feel like we're probably going to get into this when we have Mike on to a certain
Monsieur
degree, too.
Nettle,
but he said a few things that sort of like made you realize that he knows that he's sort of like losing some civil libertarians that are on his left.
Yeah.
Because he sort of, was talking in regards to the NSA, was talking about basically like he called civil libertarians patriots and sort of like reached out to them basically in regards to sort of like he understood where they were coming from, but still sort of like,
I think
felt
this is
like,
also a way to sort of tamp down the far right fervor that like somehow turns people who have differing ideas of patriotism into, like, enemy combatants, basically.
Yes.
Like, there are people who are giving away state secrets illegally, and that is what... He made that distinction, where he said, like, people who are legally, you know, advocating transparency and, you know, advocating against... for privacy are not bad people. They're still patriots. They just have a different vision of what being a patriot means. But that doesn't mean they're, like, plotting the end of the destruction of America.
Right.
Which is the kind of black and white thinking that often gets applied to anything that has to do with him. So I'm glad that he at least made the point. Because he is often not the greatest defender of those to his left who find his approaches to everything to be a little bit...
Too far to the right.
Too far to the right.
Yeah.
But in a situation like this where it's the far left that's causing him the issues and not the far right... It's sort of important that he at least stand with the medium far left.
Right.
And kind of, like, make sure that people know that, like, lefties are not... They're not revolutionaries. They may be radicals, but they're not revolutionaries.
Yeah. And lastly, and probably most hilariously...
He hates Putin.
He really hates...
Who doesn't?
...Putin. But
that guy looks
sort
like
of
a
like,
dick.
In a very sort of, like, what's becoming more and more a sort of open way. I mean, there's... You know, usually with leaders of a country...
Right, you're sort of
like
careful.
The size and power of Russia, you're, a little bit careful. But no, not anymore.
No, he's sort of like...
He did say that he gets along with him. But then he also went on to say, he said, I know the press likes to focus on body language. And he's got that kind of slouch, looking like the bored kid in the back of the classroom. I'm like, what would have possessed him to sort of like
to
feel like
go into a description of that?
Of his body language. Yeah.
Well... He was trying to be cool. He likes to make cool, casual observations like this. Yeah. And then, so last week, we brought you news of just how many Hillary biopics are...
Right, we talked with Grant
coming
about
out.
This.
Yeah.
And there's a lot. There's going to be
too
one.
Too many, some might argue.
Many may argue.
Yeah.
Especially because I feel like they're probably going to be boring.
Well, they're definitely going to be boring.
Especially the one on CNN.
I mean...
Actually, the CNN one might be good because they might just go...
Go full drama.
Full salacious on it.
Yeah,
because
exactly.
Because that's what they're up to these days, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, anything that tries to be a reasoned, like, fair look at Hillary Clinton is going to be a snore fest.
Totally.
No.
But anyway, the Rents Priebus and the RNC are not happy about this.
This is free publicity
it's
for
free
Hillary.
Publicity. And they... But
having an interesting life should not allow you to get free publicity.
No. But the funny thing about this is what they are threatening to do, I think, should not really scare anyone to
right.
a certain degree. Because basically what they said that they are going to do is they're going to make sure that the Republicans do not partner with those two networks, NBC and CNN, when it comes to the debates in the 2016
primary
season.
All
700 debates. Which
that had zero viewers.
All of those should be happening on Fox News anyway.
Oh yeah, they're not real debates.
Like once you're cheering for like sick people to be like dying in hospitals
right.
and like all brown people to go back to their home countries, like CNN shouldn't be participating in that anyway.
No.
Like just let Fox have that.
Exactly.
Let them do whatever they want to do. They can boo gay soldiers. They
yeah.
can. I mean,
once you're on Fox, all doors are open to you.
That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah, they can do whatever they want over there.
There'll be no controversy. No one will ever find out that they did it.
No.
So it'll be great.
No, nobody will have to know.
Yeah, I'm certainly not nervous for NBC because NBC runs the left-wing, you know, sort of political channels.
Right.
Like, MSNBC is not going to be sorry that they can't show the 2016
no.
Republican primary debates.
No. And also, I would argue with Rents Priebus that as it is going to be on NBC, it will be unwatched anyway.
Correct.
By all people. I didn't want to say that with Grant last week because, bless his heart, he was just on a show that got canceled on NBC, and so I felt like that would have been heartless. But he's not here.
He's not here right now.
So this
we're
week,
free to say anything we want
say
about NBC.
Nobody will see the NBC one.
No.
And actually,
no one's going to watch the CNN
as
one
it
either.
Stands right now, nobody's going to watch the CNN one either.
So these are smart moves, whether or not these people are involved in Hillary
yeah.
related
yeah.
endeavors.
Yeah.
But this is a good opening to bring our to begin our discussion of 2016.
So we're here with our friend Mike Nuttall, and we're going to talk about 2016. We've talked a lot about this on the podcast between Lila and I, but we've also talked a lot about how we aren't huge fans of Hillary. So we
right.
felt like it was only fair to have someone on who is a supporter of Hillary so he can sort of talk us
defend,
through it.
Defend the troops.
Yeah.
Me.
So I've come here to actually turn both of you to Hillary supporters, so I'm ready.
Great. Okay, good.
Perfect.
Go.
Well, no, we want... So we, you know, we have laid out on the podcast before our reasons for not supporting Hillary, and from our perspective, she's very far to the right, and she's sort of a moderate candidate. And we worry about that because
right.
she's already run a primary where she was too moderate to really appeal to her base.
But when we said that to you before we started recording,
right.
you looked at us like we were headless.
Exactly.
So you felt during the last primary when it was against Barack Obama that you felt she was too far to the right and that's why she lost.
Well, I felt that for most of her career, but I felt like that was one of the reasons that her campaign didn't come together as expected, didn't really like catch a sort of moment the way that Obama's did, because he sort of came across as this like populist guy who was so popular and fun and everyone so likable and seemed like he really cared, you know, about the youth voters and, you know, minority voters and all these things. And her campaign came across as very dry, and when it didn't come across as dry, she came across as kind of mean and potentially not like she really understood what the vast majority of people go through on a daily basis. So that's why I'm interested to see that she suddenly, you know, she had this very popular run as Secretary of State. So I think we're both sort of interested to see, to understand why she sort of like got the second win, because her camp, she was dead at the end of that last election cycle. Her campaign was acknowledged to be one of the worst run campaigns like in the universe. And so.
Well, I don't know if I would go that far.
It was acknowledged by me and Brent, certainly.
Yeah.
Well, I think Barack Obama did a very good job during his campaign.
Sure.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I think Hillary did a really good job, too, and her campaign didn't do horrible. However, I just think at that time, what the nation was looking for, Barack Obama succeeded and won. But I think ultimately, when we looked at the final counts, because of the way the Electoral College works, he won, but yet she still had more votes individually.
She had a lot of supporters, but she also had a massive advantage going in because she was like a literal nobody. And that's very true. She was the sort of, like in this election cycle where we're sort of considering her the inevitable winner, she kind of came into that as the inevitable winner. And so it sort of seems like we're setting ourselves up for the same kind of failure, which is, I think, what me and Brent have been talking about a lot, at least, is that this seems like a setup for the exact same game to play out where, like, random Johnny person will come out and be fun-looking and seem like maybe he doesn't wag his finger at us as much, and then, you know, we'll all kind of get swept up in the excitement, and then it'll sort of spell doom for her again, and it won't really even be anything she did. She just won't have done anything to actively combat it. She'll just have been herself who seemed inevitable, so.
Well, I think part of the problem, too, when we're talking about elections, such as the 2016 election coming up soon.
Coming up in years soon. From now.
Yeah. It's very soon in terms of politics, when you think about it.
Yeah.
But I think it's also when people vote a lot of times.
Yeah.
You know, I think whatever top candidates you get from either party, you look at them and, for the most part, you say they're reasonable people and probably any of them would do an okay job at it.
Yes.
But when it comes down to it, especially with Barack and Hillary, I think for a lot of people, at that time, and what was going on with the economy, what was going on with society, it was, who can I relate to more? Maybe, who do I just like more?
Yeah.
And I think Hillary had, from the time she's been in the White House, has been very careful because she's been, you know, kicked to the curb a few times by the news media. And she knows what her husband went through, too. So I think she's very careful with her image and what was going on. Where I think Barack Obama's campaign was a little bit different.
They could take some risks.
It was a little more cavalier.
Because what did they have to lose?
Very cavalier.
And I think they also energized a youth vote, which wasn't there before.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I feel that the average voter didn't get to see who Hillary Clinton really is.
Has Hillary Clinton ever run a campaign in which it really seemed like everyone did connect and see who she was? Because I was in New York State when she ran for Senate, and I voted for her in that election, certainly, but I didn't support her in the primary because she was far to the right of the other candidate, and it seemed like it was almost like the same story, where she was like the inevitable winner in a much bigger way there, because there's no way a Republican wins that seat in New York State. But people were sort of unenthused about her because she seemed like a very sort of moderate, middle-of-the-road person who potentially represented as much of the problem as she was claiming that she was going to solve. She doesn't really have the advantage of being able to sort of appear to be divorced from all of these other, like, you know, big business connections that she has and these sort of, like, other Clinton connections that she has, because the Clintons are very well connected. And in many ways, don't they sort of have the problem that Romney had of being the problem that we all are trying to get, you know, that we're trying to solve by electing someone random who we don't know what they stand for, like Obama?
Well, you know, I mean, talking about Hillary and seeing who Hillary is, I think we actually do see who Hillary is, but in the fact that she's a hard worker. When she was in the White House with her husband, she went up against healthcare to try to tackle that problem, and she made that famous line, "I'm not going to be in the kitchen making cookies."
Sure.
Yep. Which I think at that
and
time...
And she was sort of considered a silent partner almost in that presidency.
Right. And I think at that time that was groundbreaking because
a lot of people joked about her being the sort of secret president.
Right.
Yeah.
No. Exactly. And people, I think, were taken aback by a woman coming to the forefront saying, you know, I understand what tradition is, but that's not what I'm going to do. I'm here to make a difference. And I think she went out and tried to solve healthcare, and she failed.
Yeah.
But the thing that we learned about Hillary is that she comes back day after day swinging, and she's not going to stop. She has goals, she has ambition, and she's going after that. And she, no matter how many times she fails, she learns from her mistakes and she comes back over and over and over
again. Has she yet succeeded?
And what I would say is that I agree with you about that, and I have even said this on the podcast before, is that I don't necessarily think that she would be a terrible president.
No, I think she would be a Clinton president.
I just think that in terms of, like, when you get the chance to, in a primary, sort of, like, pick between, look, they're all going to be exactly the same on all social issues. You're not going to have a Democrat who's going to be, like, against gay marriage this time. We're too far past that.
Yeah.
So, like, when it comes to abortion and gay marriage and things, everybody's going to be the same. So the things that are going to differentiate between people are going to be things like foreign policy. They're going to be like the economy. And I think that that's where those are the two places where she leans a little bit more to the right.
And where she has the perception of being the old guard, where she's sort of considered part of the group that caused the problem. you know?
Well, I think there's no way of getting around that she's an established politician. Right. Politics have been her life.
Yeah. Yes.
But I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing.
She can't run as an outsider.
Right. Definitely not.
She just can't.
No.
But this was supposed to be her advantage as a senator because, you know, she got replaced by a total nobody. Like, Kirsten Gillibrand was representing a small seat in upstate New York that was a Republican district. She was essentially a Republican at the time that she was in the House. And she moved into the Senate because she got appointed and had just come to Washington. She came from she's like a corporate lawyer, and she came from like a vaguely politically connected family in New York, but not anything on the federal level. And she's just been, you know, we talk about this all the time on the podcast. She's been a lot more effective than Hillary as a senator because she's so random. No, like, she's just nagging the shit out of everybody, so she's getting stuff done. But a lot of the issues that Hillary kind of got blocked on because she was an insider and because everyone was sort of, like, ready to fight her from the moment she came in because there was this perception that she was so powerful, Gillibrand's run with. I mean, she got the 9/11 health bill passed because she was just nagging every person.
She was instrumental in Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
Instrumental in Don't Ask, Don't Tell, all because she was just nagging the shit out of everybody. But it was because she kind of was, like, random enough to do it. And Hillary's big problem in the Senate was that she was an insider, and that she, because of that, there was so much built up aggression towards her before she even tried to do anything that she got blocked at like every turn.
But see, I there's two things that I want to discuss about this and your philosophy on this, which I partly agree with you.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I think there's a big difference between, you know, Gillibrand coming out on whatever news channel talking about whatever her issues are, trying to get national attention to her issues.
Right.
And Hillary, who traditionally has not went out on, you know, whatever telecast or whatever news program out there, and has more likely built consensus with the people that are against her programs. I mean, if you look in the Senate, she is well respected by the Republicans. Not all of them, but some
she's
of them.
She's good friends with a lot of them.
Exactly.
Like she's socializing with them.
But to be a good politician, I think, in today's society, you have to do that. No matter how much you dislike the opposition, you have to build some kind of consensus or at least understand where they're coming from and what they're doing. And I think over her time, she has learned from being First Lady of Arkansas till now that if you don't engage them and work with them, that you're going to be stuck.
If you'd like to listen to our full discussion with Mike, it's available at our website at www.braintrustlive.com. The rest of our regular podcast continues right now.
So Steve King continues to be racist.
Correct.
He's not backing down from racism, certainly. He's stared down racism and hasn't flinched.
Exactly.
Hasn't flinched.
Staring down the barrel of racism.
Yeah, exactly. He was on Meet the Press this morning.
Right.
And he really just is not going to take back his comment about...
The cantaloupe-sized calves.
Because they're hauling marijuana.
Mexican immigrants.
Yeah. He said that that hasn't been debunked by math, but, like, obviously, of course it hasn't, because, like, how many illegal immigrants are, like, there's no way to, we don't know how many of them are, because his exact quote was that, for every valedictorian, there are more.
Right, there are, like,
so
five.
We don't know how many valedictorians there are, we don't know how many illegal immigrants are hauling 75 pounds of, I mean, there's a lot of semantics going on here that we don't really know how to unpack.
Exactly.
So he's right. We haven't debunked it. We can't.
No. when you make an arbitrary, crazy claim that has no basis in fact in the first place, it's very hard to debunk.
Yeah.
It's hard to debunk a crazy story.
Yeah, it's like when Ted Cruz was announcing how many communists were at
Harvard. You can't...
You don't know.
There's no statistic for how many communists there aren't at Harvard, so you can't know. And so similarly, Steve King is sticking with this story.
Yeah.
He's really like... I mean, he's gotten a lot of flack for this, and he has not bothered to worry even for a second that maybe digging himself in deeper is a bad idea. He's willing to confirm that he thinks this to anyone who's willing to listen.
Yes.
As he did on Meet the Press.
Right. And one of the people who was on Meet the Press is a Republican strategist, and her name is Ana Navarro, and she is Hispanic, and so she sort of is...
And she's sometimes on Bill Maher, and
she's
seen her on
Bill
Maher.
She's actually she's kind of clever. Like, she's quippy. She always has, like,
she's also kind of
funny... Yeah, sort of.
She's a person...
less awful than Steve King.
Correct. She's a person who will go on as a Republican and talk about immigration reform and not see that she's, like, representing a party that doesn't... That thinks not just that her ideas on immigration reform are crazy, but that her own people are, like, criminals and other... You know, like, she can't, like, really unpack the, like, racism part from the rest of Republican ideology. That's what drives me nuts about her.
Right,
anyway,
But basically what had happened, it was interesting because she was on the panel, which they had started sort of like a panel discussion. And right. then they had Steve King on. And they just sort of like did an interview with Steve King. And the Steve King interview was not at all sort of like integrated into the panel discussion.
Right.
So basically they interviewed Steve King. He said the horrible things that he normally says.
Correct.
About immigration. And then David Gregory says, all right, thanks to Congressman Steve King from Iowa, you know,
right.
catch you later. Basically, that's not what he said. Obviously, he wouldn't have said that. But
people with man-child syndrome can't be that casual.
Was over.
Right.
And so then he comes back to the panel and directs a question to immigration about immigration to Anna Navarro, who said, I think that Congressman King should go get himself some therapy for his melon fixation. I think there might be medication for that. I think he's a mediocre congressman with no legislative record, and the only time he makes national press is when he comes out and says something offensive about the undocumented or Hispanics. So David Gregory says to Anna Navarro, now Steve King just heard that, so let's go back to Steve King. And so they cut to like a sort of like the two window situation.
Right.
Steve King looked like he was sort of like almost like coming back in to sort right. of address this. Like his, because his interview was like literally over.
Well, he so also think, can never be stopped from responding to no. a comment
so
about
I
his comment.
I think when she said this, she sort of felt like that there was maybe not going was to gone. Be any sort of like recourse
yeah. Yeah.
for having said such a thing. So he comes back and says, I spoke only of drug smugglers, and if Anna understands the yeah. language, she should know that.
Yeah.
Wow.
He took a comment about his racism mm-hmm. and went full racist on it.
Yeah, he did.
He didn't.
Yeah.
He didn't flinch for a moment.
You never want to go full racist.
No, you never want to go. Where would who said that?
It's you never want to go full retard.
A full retard,
which is not PC. Not it's PC. From that movie.
Yeah, it's from a movie.
It's from the what the hell movie was that?
I can't remember what movie it is.
Shoot.
But now we've
anyway
we have no reference now. But yeah, the point is
anyway you can't go full retard. You can't go full racist either.
Right. No.
But Steve King
certainly
did.
Not. Steve King's not afraid, and he also evidently not afraid of the IRS because he's encouraging people to defy the IRS because he's so wrapped up in this nonsense scandal that the IRS has like got some political motivation. And it's like right. targeting Tea Party groups or whatever right. nonsense.
He was at a family leadership conference,
just the wrong place
Iowa.
To be. A
don't be going
don't go there.
there.
I mean, if you're Steve King, go ahead.
Go there. But I think what we should say is don't exist.
Right.
Family leadership
exactly.
conference. But he basically sort of like went on a tear about how you should be saying what you think on the pulpit and wherever else, even if right. you're sort of like a tax exempt group, and that you shouldn't be afraid of the IRS. And he was like, I'll stand with you and we can preach it together. It's like, okay.
Well, you can do that, but then you have to pay taxes.
Right. Which that's, you and I have discussed.
Which we have talked about a lot.
Churches should have to do.
Right.
I mean,
churches should not be tax
exempt. I'm saying that as a person who goes to one.
Right. But you're comfortable with the idea that they might have to pay taxes, like all other American organizations.
Yes.
They're not providing right. a public service to the entire community.
No.
So, screw them.
And they're a business.
They're a business, yeah.
They're first, and I say this with love.
Right.
Their first order of business is to make money.
Yeah.
That's what you have to do.
They can't exist. They can't have all those pretty buildings without
no.
the money.
No.
The money's key.
So, therefore, you should be able to say whatever you want inside. And
absolutely.
You should also pay taxes for it.
Exactly.
So.
Like any other, if me and Brent started a group here that was making money, where we went around making blatantly political comments,
right.
and 80% of our work was about us, you know, was us going on about political things and lobbying for various ideas, and 20% of our work was us being nice to the community, which is sort of what churches do. Even though it's supposed to be that, you know, to be tax exempt, you're only supposed to allow maybe like 20% of your work to be political in nature, and then the 80% is yeah. supposed to be other stuff. Churches exist to preach ideology, so they really can't argue that they're just there for the good of the community. They're not
right.
80% about charity. So,
no.
There it is. Said it.
That's it.
That's it. So, Steve King, we agree with you.
We agree.
Churches should not be afraid of the IRS, but they should also be paying taxes.
Right. Yeah. One way to not live in fear of the IRS
is to just pay your taxes. Exactly.
Exactly, yes.
Just not worry about it.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Then there's
they're
no...
Not, the IRS rarely bothers me. I pay
right.
my taxes every year.
Yeah.
Just go on with my life. I never get phone calls from them or
right,
anything.
Exactly.
I never... Big news in the journalism world.
Yes.
Washington Post... sold
yes
to the Amazon founder. Yeah,
yeah.
But to him privately, not to Amazon.
Correct.
So
it's not owned by Amazon.
It's privately owned again. It was actually, it had been purchased in, I think, the 70s.
Yeah.
And traded publicly for a while.
Right.
And now it's back to being privately owned, which makes it one of the last papers. The New York Times is still privately owned. But it's one of the last, it's probably why it's one of the last national papers that's good, too.
Yeah.
But it's one of the last national papers that is privately owned, and especially of that size and reputation.
Yeah.
It seems like, it initially to me this sounded like a horrific thing that I wanted to cry about.
Right.
It, upon further inspection, seems like it's not worse than what was going on there before.
No, I mean...
And I think that, you know, if it's... I think that there is sort of, like, no incentive to sort of change the direction of the paper from the new leadership or anything like that. Like, I think they, you know, they want to make sure it's a money-making proposition. So
well, right.
They want to make sure it's profitable again. I'm sure that someone who understands the internet can do that.
Well, right. And that's what a lot of people are sort of, like, hoping that he can bring to this is because, you know, it's not making money. And, you know, you... Certainly there are questions about sort of, you know, the future of journalism in the right. sense that, like, how is it, you know, he's obviously comes from, like, the digital world. Like, what does that sort of, like,
what does
mean,
that mean for
this or whatever? But, I mean, you want sort of, the way I feel about it is that you sort of would like newspapers to continue to exist, obviously.
Right.
But you don't have to be getting it on your doorstep in the morning.
Right. I mean, well, I think that's sort of why people think that,
This could be something.
I think though that there is something about, I think there's a reason that the New York Times and the Washington Post have survived and all of these other local newspapers have not. I think there's a reason the LA Times is on its, been on its last legs now for years.
Yeah.
And it's because in New York and DC, people really do use papers.
Yes.
Cause you commute with the paper. Here, you don't do that. So I think that that's why those old papers are able to survive in that form. And I think that there is room for published national papers in certain locales based,
yeah.
you know, and based in major places. Like, there's a reason that Washington needs a major paper, and it's because
well, right.
it's the capital.
Well,
New York City is the financial capital. There's a reason they need a, you know, that there's a major paper there. And I think the lifestyle there lends itself to an old-fashioned newspaper. I just think that there's got to be a way to... make that also profitable for people who aren't in commuting on the DC metro every day.
Right. Well, and there has been sort of recently more of people have been sort of okay with paying for content.
Yeah, the Times somehow,
you know,
after failing to do that for a long time, managed
right.
to get it.
And
make
I think
it
it's
work.
Because people are sort of like realizing that those are still the places to sort of like get the best.
Right.
There's still something to be said for quality.
Yeah.
So I think that as long as you can sort of like figure out the correct business approach to make money and not
yeah.
sort of like lose the quality, you know, I mean, like when I was a journalism student, we were supposed to be reading the Washington Post every day.
Right.
I mean, even more than the New York Times, which I mean, sort of people consider the
paper of record.
Paper of record. But yeah. I mean, you know, I mean, the Washington Post is where you, you know, it's the best. Ultimately, the best place to read about what's going on in the Capitol.
Right.
So whether it's happening on your iPad or happening on your doorstep, I mean,
yeah.
it's sort of, certainly they have to figure out how to, they can make money. Because
yeah.
on the internet, it's a little bit
harder.
But, you know, I don't know. I mean, it seems like even...
I still don't fully understand why that is, because just like the regular newspaper, the internet newspaper is ad-supported. Regular newspapers don't... actually cost $1.20, you know, for when I was growing up, the New York Times was like $1.25 or something like that every day.
Yeah.
It was a 50 cents or, you know,
yeah.
like the Sunday paper was like $2 and the rest of it was like $1. It was very cheap and it was basically just paying the printing costs of that paper.
Sure.
It was not paying for the content. You're not paying reporters by charging $1 per paper
right.
to people.
No.
It's ad supported.
Ads. Sure.
The internet too is
also
ad supported. So it's, And the internet has a lot more room to be ad supported because there's different pages. Every, you know, like
it's true.
You're searching to
you
so many. Every time
you
go to an article,
click through,
exactly.
You have some.
You have a
new
ad
thing that you have to look at.
So I've never fully understood why there isn't a way to make that model work in the first place. And I'm
yeah.
just a person who doesn't understand. You know, it's not. I'm sure
right.
there's a reason, but I think that there's probably someone who's positioned to sort of figure this out.
Yeah.
In the same way that people are starting to figure out how to make money off digital content, like digital video content.
Sure.
So,
yeah.
like, couldn't this be a thing that people can do?
Yeah.
And I mean, Amazon has their own sort of, like, digital content delivery system.
Yep.
this is something that I assume the owner of Amazon knows of.
Yeah.
One would think. Yeah. So I think there's probably a way to integrate the journalism world into something, you know, that is worth delivering digitally for money instead of...
Right, I agree. There's just been sort of like... It's been interesting because since this happened, and I think it happened on Monday, there's been sort of like a lot of chatter about sort of like, you know, not necessarily in regards specifically to this, but sort of like, what is journalism now? Like in the sense that, you know, just for example, before last week, Obama gave a huge speech about like housing and sort of like his new housing proposals. He gave a big interview and did like some video content for Zillow, which is like a real
housing,
estate website. Like, are the people who run Zillow, are they journalists? I mean, they're not, ultimately.
But they interview the president.
But they interview the president.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a lot of sort of, and he's...
Well, and BuzzFeed often toes that line, I think, more than any other news site, because they do have journalists working for BuzzFeed.
Right.
As we know from the bizarre...
But they also have done...
But
dumb
most of the website is lists about the top 21 things you'll remember as a child of the 90s.
Yeah.
So, like, I mean, that's not journalism. I mean, it's a type of journalism.
It is, right, exactly.
It's a curating.
It's not one that you
like,
want to pay for.
The 21 happiest images of animals is not...
No.
It's not news.
It's what you want to look at when you're at work.
Exactly.
But it's...
Yeah, I could spend all day on BuzzFeed, but not reading the news there.
No.
But that doesn't... But they do have journalists working there, and it's sort of a hybrid site, because it's mostly an entertainment site, but it periodically breaks big stories. So it's... I think someone who sort of the digital world maybe will... understand kind of how to integrate a major paper into that world without losing its reputation. But you never know. Could be terrible. Shit could fall apart immediately.
Yes.
But speaking of newspapers...
God.
The governor of Maine, LePage, who's a guy who's famously, like, tried to take down a labor mural at one point.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
He's terrible.
A Republican.
He's a crazy Republican. They do not like him in Maine. He's very unpopular.
No, but Maine is sort of, like, not necessarily... I mean, they elect Republicans a lot of times, but they don't...
They're not committed.
They don't elect, like, bonkers Republicans.
No, this is...
But they accidentally did here.
A bizarre... Yeah.
Yeah.
He's looking to blow up the Press Herald, a newspaper in Maine.
Yeah.
He was in... That's according to the Bangor Daily News. Like, I don't... Like, all these newspapers are just reporting on various other newspapers.
Well, and the situation that got him into saying this in the first place is sort of ridiculous, because he was in a fighter jet simulation with a local defense contractor, mysteriously, and they were like, what do you want to do? And he goes, I want to find the Press Herald building and blow it up.
Like...
And then he had to...
Right, because then it got reported that he had threatened the Press Herald. This is... I have family that... I have an uncle who's a newspaper editor in Maine.
Oh, fancy.
So I'm curious to know what they're thinking about this. I don't think their paper is a big LePage supporter. But
probably not.
I don't think any newspaper in Maine is.
Probably not. Not anymore.
Certainly not anymore.
Yeah.
But that's probably why he's trying to blow them up. He's not getting good press over there. He never has been. So... meanwhile, in L.A., we had
a huge situation this week.
Crazy situation this week.
If you don't live here, you might not know what was going on.
Right.
But there was an Amber Alert, which you probably, know what that is.
People
basically.
Do. But, a kid got abducted.
Right, exactly. And it was sort of like a crazy story, too, because this guy was sort of, like, obsessed with this teenage girl, and then sort of, like, kidnapped her, and then, like,
burned down.
Down his own house, but, like,
the mother and the brother
were in it, so it was a very tragic story, but basically then he sort of, like, took off with the girl.
Right.
So there was an Amber Alert.
And it almost caused further tragedy, because certain of us got the Amber Alert while we were driving. Other people got it in the middle of the night.
So there's this new thing. This is the first time that...
That they've done this.
That they've done it, but you now get Amber Alerts on your phone.
Yeah.
And
it makes
a
very alarming sound. Usual sound.
And until you shut it off, it's going to continue to go off.
Yeah.
But it literally, and it was like at 11 o'clock at night. So it woke a lot of people up. A lot of people, I mean, even sort of if you were in your car, it was sort of like one of those things where like it was supposed to be. And I think at that point still sort of like near San Diego or something.
Yeah.
This is happening. Cause it was almost near like the California or the Mexico border.
Well, but all it said was Boulevard, California.
It had no information.
Yeah.
So it was wildly unhelpful.
Right. and I was like, is it happening right here? Am I on the block with the Amber Alert?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I was driving to work when I got the Amber Alert. Some people got it in the middle of the night. I didn't get it till the next morning. I was certain that they were warning me.
It was like at 10:55, and I got it at that time. But
in California, we're always talking about when the big one's coming, the big earthquake.
Yes, right.
I thought it was warning me that the big one was coming.
Oh,
and
right.
I was like, I do not want to die in Beverly Hills. So I got very alarmed about
that.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
That's the last place you want to be in a big earthquake.
Yeah.
because it's full of old people. Can you imagine driving out of Beverly Hills during the big one?
No.
You like Cadillac with a slow old driver after Cadillac with a slow old driver. Like you'd want
to never be able to leave.
Never leave.
Yeah.
You'd die with all the old people there. But it was very controversial because it happened to everyone and it took everyone by surprise. And it happened sort of like at an inconveniently late time of night.
Right.
It wasn't like at 4 o'clock we all got an Amber Alert.
Right. Which here's how I feel about it.
These things happen.
I was gonna say, here's how I feel about it. I think that it's sort of in theory is a good idea in the sense that like you want if you're looking for a car or a person, you want everybody to know about it. Because that's
how that strategy works. When they put those billboards up saying that so and so silver Ford Focus is doing whatever, people it helps them find the Ford
and
Focus.
The way that this person was ultimately caught and the girl is fine, thank God. But he was found in Ohio, and it was because somebody like saw. They didn't see the car, but they saw someone who was supposedly
in Utah,
like
or Idaho.
Idaho. What did I say?
Ohio.
Oh, yeah, it's a Idaho. State. That's what I meant. It is.
I was like, God, he got really far.
I know. Yeah, Idaho, who saw him and sort of knew that it looked like him, and it wasn't necessarily from the Amber Alert, but it was from someone
publicity.
Knowing. Yeah, I mean, that's how you find things out like this from the missing people, but. For us to be getting it, supposedly it's location-based.
Right.
It was, at the time, supposedly he was, like, in San Diego or something like that. So we're about 2.5 hours north of that. So it wasn't necessarily super helpful. And to have no information, it was even less helpful.
Yeah.
And at 11 o'clock at night, like, the majority of people are not, like, out hunting Nissan Versas, like, on the freeway.
Right.
It's just sort of, like, it didn't seem super effective. And it wasn't super effective because he made it all to Idaho.
It encouraged a lot of people to turn off their Amber Alerts, whereas I think if it had been a slightly more useful thing...
You want your first one to maybe be like 6:30.
Exactly.
Like, people are in rush hour and they can be like, look, there it is.
And also, you want your first one to say, like, spotted in West Hollywood.
Right, exactly.
Blah, blah, blah. Not a place no one's heard of with no information about what we're looking for.
Right.
Like... Little girl with brown hair
people,
kidnapped by man with baseball hat and blue Nissan Versa, and he's last seen driving down the 5 between San Diego and Los Angeles. That's helpful.
Yeah, the only thing
I would accept a comically long Amber Alert if I could have all
the only thing that this accomplished was getting people to panic and to shut off their Amber Alerts.
Yeah, exactly. And I would like to be the kind of person who can help find a child abductor when the time comes, but I don't want to die in my car because my phone makes the most terrifying
sound. Yeah, it sounded like an alarm.
It sounded like...
And my phone is always on silent.
Yeah.
It didn't matter. It still made a noise.
Exactly. Mine was
like
on silent, too.
It bypassed all of the...
It bypassed everything that I held dear about, right?
Exactly.
And it was vibrating like crazy, too.
Yeah.
So, in any case, it was controversial.
It was controversial, but it's good that she was found.
Yes.
And he actually was... shot.
Yeah, he was killed.
He was killed.
On the scene,
I
think.
And the father's still alive, so she's been, I think, reunited with her father, so that's good. I mean, tragic story.
Right, it's certainly not awesome to have to be reunited with your father because your mother and brother are dead, but...
Right, but you also don't want to be sort of like the thing that really made people anti-Amber Alert.
Right.
I mean, not that she could help that. She didn't find anything out herself, but I mean...
No, it was not the most... I mean, I'm hoping that they sort of figure out how to do this
I think this was the first time.
Well, it's like when they first started doing alerts about natural disasters. Like, I got a bunch of Hurricane Sandy alerts because I have a New York City phone number. Even though I was out here, I think they probably realized that it was better to do it by locale than phone number, ultimately.
Because supposedly, I think they're doing it now by, like, cell tower. Like,
yeah,
cell
by
tower
cell towers.
Connected to.
Yeah. And I think that's probably why I didn't get it when everyone else got it. I think I was probably not... Like, I think I probably moved to a cell tower and then it sent it to me later or something like that. But in any case, that's a thing that's going to be happening now. I mean, we get them sometimes. I get earthquake ones sometimes or something. I've been getting alerts of sorts.
Maybe.
I mean, I'm a panicker, so I like to get as many alerts as possible.
Sure.
I like to be warned as much as I can.
Yeah.
You know, in advance of the big one. Get myself out of Beverly Hills fast. I would rather be literally anywhere else. They probably have good infrastructure there, though.
I bet they do.
They probably can feed you for a long time.
Probably.
Yeah.
Well, you had a serious situation this
week.
There
was a gas leak next to my office.
Yeah, well,
we
had to evacuate.
We had to evacuate, and we walk out. I didn't bring my purse because I was like, oh, I'm just going to stand out. I felt like a fire drill, so I was like, I'm probably going to find out it's fine, and we're going to go back in. 4.5 hours later, we're sitting at a bar waiting for something to happen.
Yeah.
I had to text Brent and be like, because we finally got back in just as the workday was ending, but I was almost like, Brent's going to have to come get me and drive me home because he's the only person with a key to my house currently.
Right.
Like, it was just maddening.
Yeah.
Yeah. But also kind of fun.
I'm sure. Well, nothing, you didn't have to work.
I didn't have to work for half a day. Yeah. I just got to hang around.
That's what you want.
That's exactly what you want. Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Speaking of people not working.
Oh, God. Bob Filner. Just, you know what?
Shoot yourself in
the head. Yeah.
Go jump in a well.
Yeah. Do all of the tragic things that you can think of to do to yourself.
Do all of them. Start immediately.
Yeah. He went on Monday, started his two-week intensive behavior therapy.
He's a real overachiever.
Well, he's done. Everything's been solved.
His two-week treatment was condensed somehow into 5 days, and he's all set.
Nothing to see here, people. Right. I've got it under control.
Yeah.
5 days behavior therapy just totally excuses all 13 people that I sexually harassed.
He's going to continue to see a therapist on an outpatient basis, which the entire country does, and that's not stopped anyone from sexually harassing a single person, so that's not going to be effective at all.
Yeah.
Barbara Boxer's not a fan.
B-Box got into, not into it this week.
Yeah.
Not at all.
She told him we should step down.
Yeah, she did. And she said, well, and that two of the recent people who have said that he sexually assaulted them or harassed them or whatever he did were former military.
Right, it was in San Diego.
And so there's an ongoing... There's an ongoing fight
about sexual assault in the military.
Right, which we talked about a couple weeks ago.
Gillibrand's got a bill.
And also, Claire McCaskill was on Meet the Press this morning. She's not speaking nonsense about the whole thing. Yeah. Like, she's not the way to go.
No,
if you're picking, if you're picking bills between Gillibrand and McCaskill, it's, you if don't you're go
picking
the McCaskill bill.
Between Gillibrand and McCaskill in on any life. Issue for life, make the right choice.
Who to have lunch with.
Exactly.
Like, Gillibrand is the right answer.
Exactly.
Yeah.
There's not... Yeah.
But anyway, she said, as we fight in the Senate to stand up for men and women in our military who are survivors of sexual assault, I have listened to them talk about the pain that will always be with them. She said, the latest revelations regarding your behavior toward women recovering from sexual assault have shaken me to my core. You should step down immediately.
Yeah.
And I don't think there's really anybody who... disagrees with this other than he himself at this point. And he's literally the only person who thinks he should still be in office.
Pulling an Anthony Weiner. But a worse Anthony Weiner, because Anthony Weiner was just sexting women.
Right, and Anthony Weiner did step down.
Yeah.
Like, there were calls for his resignation, so he did it.
Yeah. This is different because this guy was basically abusing his office.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
That's worse.
It is.
Like, step down if you're if you're abusing the powers of your office, step down.
Yeah, he was abusing his power as mayor, whereas Anthony Weiner was just
being a douchebag and
power as a douchebag. Schmarmy asshole.
Yeah, which is what it's your right as an American, you know.
And he has more schmarmy asshole power than just about anybody else.
Exactly.
It's like Superman when it comes to schmarmy asshole power.
So true. But yeah, it's surprising to me that this has not, you know, been more of a national story in the wake of all of the stories about Anthony Weiner.
Right. I think it's just because he's a mayor.
Yeah.
I think nobody cares.
Nobody cares. And he's the mayor of San Diego, and everyone's like, you guys made your bed. If you're going to be San Diego, just deal with yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
But I'm sort of shocked that this is still going on.
I know.
I'm shocked he had the gall to leave his counseling early.
Right?
I would have stayed even if I were bored up, you know.
You just go to the, you're on San Diego, you go to the beach, and you make people think that that's where you are.
Exactly. If I had to sleep for 2 weeks just to get everyone off my back and pretend to go to counseling, I would do it. I would not, after 5 days, be like, I'm bored, I'm just going to come back. I'm fine now, guys. Don't worry about me.
You can't do that.
No, that's fool. I cannot believe that he did that.
No,
He's a fool.
He's a fool.
A foolish fool. Full of fooling and other foolery.
Also, so is Rush Limbaugh.
Yeah, correct.
Big time.
Big time fool. Full of foolery.
Tomfoolery.
Tomfoolery.
Yeah.
Other types of foolery.
There was... Oprah was on... I think it was on Entertainment Tonight. She was talking to Nancy O'Dell. She's been... she's in that new movie. What's it called? The Butler.
Oh, Oprah. The Butler, yeah.
Yeah. So she's been doing the rounds for this, basically. She's been doing press. I saw her on GMA this week, and then also on Kelly and Michael, which
here's
was
a question.
Instead this week was Michael and Aaron Andrews. I was home, I was waiting for DirecTV, I was watching morning television. Don't judge me.
I was like,
I had nothing else to
do. Why have
you
seen either of these things?
I don't normally see either of these things, but I was awake and I wasn't at work. So that's what happened. But anyway, so she was telling Nancy O'Dell a story about how she was in, I think, Switzerland, actually, and she had asked a few times to look at what was a $40,000 handbag, and finally the employee that she was asking told her that it was too expensive, based on sort of, like,
no information.
So Oprah...
Certainly not the information that she was Oprah.
Right. Had she had that information, she would have just handed it to her.
Right.
She would have told her it was $400,000.
Right, exactly.
Just pocketed the cash. But... So anyway, Oprah, of course, I think rightly.
Yeah, was furious because, mad. What other answer is there to that other than that it's like a horribly racist thing?
Right, she's black, so she couldn't afford it. Right. How can a black person possibly afford a $40,000 handbag?
It never crossed your mind that it was Oprah.
No.
Oprah can afford anything.
I think since then, actually, I read that, like, Switzerland and, like, the store that she was at have, like, issued her apologies. Like, I love that the country of Switzerland. Like, they're fucking scared of Oprah.
Oprah's that powerful.
Yeah, you don't fuck with her.
No, of course not.
So, anyway, but Rush Limbaugh had his own theory.
Yes.
And because Rush Limbaugh...
It was the wrong one.
Rush Limbaugh knows...
It was equally offensive, but it was also wrong.
Rush Limbaugh knows that this country is... We're living in a post-racial world.
Yes, of course.
Rush Limbaugh knows this.
He's been told this.
So he knows that it couldn't have been about race.
No.
So what else could it have been about?
Fat.
She's fat.
Yeah.
That's it.
That's why she's fat. Yeah. It's that fat people can't afford handbags.
Which doesn't make any sense.
No. Historically, rich people have been some of the fattest people out there. Well, they could historically
eat. He's rich and fatter than Oprah is currently.
Exactly. I mean. Well, maybe he was trying to build a bridge.
Maybe.
He's like, I'm fat, you're fat, we're both rich.
Right.
This discrimination affected me too, because it wasn't about your race, it was about fatness.
Those skinny Swiss are just fattests.
Exactly. Fattest. Yeah.
But he also went on to say other sort of, like, I think vaguely racist things. I can't even tell.
They were something-ist.
He's not making a lot of sense usually, but no. He goes, how was the Oprah dressed? He calls her the Oprah. He says, I mean, she didn't look like the Oprah, obviously. Was she wearing a jumpsuit with tennis shoes? Maybe Air Jordans that weren't laced
up. She was in basketball chic.
Yeah, she was.
Because she's a black person.
She's a black person.
Black people all dress like basketball players.
And vaguely lesbian.
Right. Both of those things. There's no other.
Yeah. I'm surprised he didn't say that.
I know.
Maybe it's because she's a lesbian.
Maybe. Maybe he knows.
I'll say it. Yeah. I'm just kidding. No. I didn't say that. I take it back.
Yeah, Brent took it back.
But anyway, Rush Limbaugh is racist, fattest. Well,
he took a racist story and added some racism to it.
Right.
He's a Steve King. He's got a lot in common with Steve King. He doesn't shy away from adding some racism to a racist situation.
No. Mm-mm.
He'll just go for it.
Yeah. All totally. But that was the news this week.
It was very light.
And people are going on vacation now, so God knows what's going to happen next week.
No.
Oh, boy.
Next week, we can talk about TV.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no, next week, we're going to talk about the economy.
We're talking about the economy. We're going to have our friend Kevin on.
Right.
Who thinks that he knows things about the economy.
Correct.
And we're going to have him explain it to us. Now, he has threatened to come with a lot more information than we're ready for.
Right.
He wants to talk about the Chinese.
He really wants to talk about China.
And we were like, no.
Right. We told him that China was off limits.
We're not talking about China.
Right.
We're not talking about Chinese currency.
And then he was talking about all, really. Right. And then he started talking about debt ratios and the GDP. And I was like, stop talking about that.
No.
Here's what I need. We're going to have him explain the stock market to us.
Right.
And
we are going to explain to him why we think the economy is fake.
Exactly.
Which we've explained to you, but we feel like we need to explain it to him.
Yeah. We need him to know. We won't rest until he does.
Yeah, exactly.
So stay tuned for that. It should be an exciting one.
Yes. And
if nothing else.
Thanks to Mike.
Yeah.
Love you.
Right.
I'm still not going to vote for Hillary.
Right.
But we love you anyway.
Right.
And
thanks for coming by. And we will see you guys next week.
Bye.